Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Warrior Undone by Jessica Rubin, narrated by Troy Duran and CJ Bloom. Prologue. Slade. The helicopter descends into the brown and gray peaked mountains that jut between the Afghanistan-Pakistan borders. Shifting forward, a tightness fills the circulated air. Systematically wringing my hands, I move them left before right. I'm a man of rituals. The door opens into extraordinary heat. It rushes forward and seeps beneath layered clothing. As I step off, my head focuses forward while my eyes do a snapshot perusal of the vast earth where people have lived and fought for centuries on end. When I slide on my sunglasses, the bright world dims. Images of the compound flash on the projector. It doesn't look different from the hundreds we've raided beforehand. "We're set to clear." The commander's hands move behind his back. He clasps them as he paces. "Marines are coming too. They'll be inserting with us and setting up a perimeter of defense. Covering while we do our work." A cough rings through the room as coordinates are mentioned. "Intel says they're abandoned. But first, sleep." A sudden sensation of falling. Hard grains of sand nestled within the sheets move against my calves and between my toes. It's gritty. It's home. A hard knock on wood before the door swings open. Someone shouts, "It's go time, boys!" I throw my legs to the right side of the bed and rise. Water to the face and brush my teeth. Time to suit up. My heart settles to a steady rhythm as I gather my weapons. The methodical movements are where I find my peace. M24 is strapped to my back, heavy enough to make a dent, but not too heavy to slow me down. An American flag sits on my bed, pre-folded. I place it between my armor and uniform. It settles inside my chest cavity. My body is its cocoon, reminding me of who I am, what I love, and where I came from. As a team, we enter the thick darkness, a perfect cover. A few kilometers into our hike, we sit to break. Rax is to my left, his photographic and video equipment resting on his side. He grumbles, spitting on the rocky ground before taking a swig from his green canteen. "How you doing, brother?" I take a drink from my own.
"Fucking A,"
he replies, but not for nothing. Rax hauls some heavy shit. Between the weight of his communications equipment and the high altitude, he is miserable. He looks up at me. It's so dark, but I can still make out his shining eyes and sharply gritted teeth. Rex is probably the angriest corpsman on the teams, yet his complete stability in the face of a firefight has always transcended any anger. Probably why we work so well together. Always have and always will. I rise before holding out my hand. He takes it. The team gets back on its feet. As I'm walking, sweat pours down my face. Our commander turns to me. "The caves are near, and we haven't encountered a single person yet. Luck of the Texans, eh?" The sun rises as we reach the complex. It's huge, circular, and wet with riotous colors. Looking up, I imagine who else around the world is staring at it, too. We start in, four of us entering in formation. Before I step inside, my rational mind reminds me there could be an ambush ahead. This cave could be booby-trapped. I turn to Rex. His eyes say, "I've got your back." I clench my fists and walk inside. It's dimly lit, but my adrenaline, it burns. I pivot. Wooden chairs and desks are organized neatly in rows facing a chalkboard. I'm in a classroom. Posters line the walls, full of anti-American slogans. Bin Laden's smile graces the largest poster in the center as two planes crash into the twin towers behind him. Death to America. Lives are dictated with propaganda. The systematic washing of brains. We clear the room and step out to report. On to the next. It's a fanatical dedication.
They're pursuing a brand new type of combat the free world is only beginning to understand. My father fought in the trenches. He rolled across deserts with huge ground forces. But us? We're up against decentralized cells. Guerrilla warfare on a scale of infinity. The work is nerve-wracking and tedious. Sweat saturates everything from my wool-blend socks up to my North Face jacket. It cools me. Hours later, our job is complete. We gather what we need before stepping out. Phil rigged each room. When he clicks, it'll all blow to hell. We easily hike down in a comfortable quiet. Phil pushes the button. The explosion causes a wild fireball against the sky, rocking the ground beneath my feet. The world is an echo. Have I been here before? The gunfire begins and the ground shifts again. Liquid black oozes from Rex's mouth and then his face is ablaze. Through a flaming mask, blue eyes stare as his mouth widens in terror. I move to him but fail to go quickly enough. An enemy comes up behind me. A jump and turn, muscles pulsing. I grab his throat with my left hand and my gun with my right. My mind tells me to forget the gunmen and go to Rex, but my body is now on auto. Years of training take control away from my conscience. He's carrying an AK-47 and a brown wool blanket. Motherfucker is going to die. I squeeze my grip, the world zeroing in on the two of us. He's thrashing. The smell of burning flesh infiltrates my senses as I squeeze. Rex. Something in the recesses of my mind knocks frantically. He's dead. Your friend is dead. You turned away, and now he's gone. It's all your fucking fault. I want to scream, but nothing comes out of my mouth. I'm a dying fish. The cemetery is cold, and everyone is gone. I've killed him. It's my fault. The sun sets, and I'm on the ground. Take me instead. Open your eyes. Open them. Open your fucking eyes, my mind screams. On an exhale, I do. A room. My room. I drop my gaze. I'm inside a bed where a thick hand is wrapped around a slender, pale neck. My hand? Teardrops pool beneath her pale eyes. The room is still dark, but nature's light illuminates her in sepia. Bare, pointed breasts quiver, and goosebumps cover her soft flesh. I gently let go, my coiled muscles unraveling as my mind recognizes the pace change. Consciousness is restored. Another night terror. My God. I trip off the bed before righting myself and flip on the light. I'm so sorry. Holy fuck, I exclaim. I turn back to her and pause at her unmoving form, shaking her. Lily, wake up. Wake up. She's unconscious. I take a sharp inhale through my nose as I check her pulse. Alive. Next, I raise her bare legs over my shoulders to promote blood flow to her brain. Years of boxing and 10 years in the SEAL teams have taught me a thing or two. 64 seconds, and her glossy blue eyes open. She's looking at me, confusion in her irises, as though she isn't sure what's happening. I turn my gaze to the bedside clock. It's 1:04 a.m. It takes a few seconds for her puzzlement to leak into fear. My handprints. I can see them against the column of her white throat. Her breathing is somewhat normalizing. Sweat drips from my forehead. I hurt you. I didn't. I pause, my hands rubbing against the back of my buzzed hair. You'll be okay. It's happened to me before. Getting choked out, I mean. You might have a headache later, but you'll be okay. She stares at me, dumbstruck, not unlike the deer I used to shoot every October.
Slade?
Her voice is hoarse as her delicate hands move up to her neck. She winces, white blonde hair twisted above her head like a wild halo. We just met tonight. I stayed until closing, just watching her wipe down the bar top. The little t-shirt that shows off her midriff and red-painted nails, she bends down to grab something below the bar. The last few tired patrons leave some cash for her before walking out.
"They're pulling out the keys,"
she nods toward the door.
"I've got a crazy good sense of hearing."
My younger brother, Aaron, had a keen sense of smell as a kid. Like a dog, he could sniff what the neighbor was cooking in the house next door. No joke. I drink more of my beer and her heart-shaped face laughs.
"Where is he now?"
"Who?" I polish off my drink, not wanting to speak anymore. I want to get this woman into my bed and lose myself in her body. We've only met tonight, but she's sweet and pretty. Reminds me of the girls I used to know.
"Your brother?"
Light eyes squint in curiosity. "Oh." I clear my throat, rubbing the back of my neck. "He wanted to be like me. Join up. But..." I lick my lips, not finishing my sentence.
"Oh, shit. Sorry."
Her gaze nervously darts to the side. "Yeah." I get off the stool. "Ready to go? My bike's outside, and my place isn't too far." Presumptuous of me, sure. But women are strange. They claim to want freedom, but most of them just want to be told what to do. Not that I mind. I'm a decent man, but I know what I like. To be in charge.
"Sure. Let me just grab my bag."
Her voice is hesitant with question, as though I might change my mind. She's sweet, but insecure. I nod before stepping outside and lighting up a smoke. When she's on the back of my bike, her fingers grip my waist in excitement and fear. She tells me,
"I've never been on a bike before,"
as I put a helmet on her head. Yet she trusts me. And now, look what I've done. I don't know what happened. I was dreaming. Let me bring you home. You shouldn't stay here with me. I could have killed you, I think. Another round of sweat coats my forehead. I jump out of bed and move around the room, steadying my trembling hands as I grab her strewed clothes off the gray carpeted floor. My place isn't much, but I always keep it spotless and organized. "Rituals," I mumble under my breath, the word leaving my mouth without any thought. My dream hits me again, ricocheting around my brain. The force is so strong, it stops my breath. I exhale, focusing on the task at hand, dressing Lily. Slowly I guide long and lean legs back into lacy black panties, trying to remain gentle. Her black miniskirt goes on next as guilt hits me like a freight train. She's moving slowly, but thankfully letting me help. Next, I clasp her bra behind her back and slide her white t-shirt over her head. It says, "Stumble in, have a drink." Millions of emotions threaten to take me down, but I tell them to shut the fuck up. Right now, I have to make sure she gets dressed and goes home safely. I'll deal with myself later. When she's clothed, I throw a pair of jersey sleep pants onto my legs and a blue t-shirt with the word Navy in bold white letters. I help her into my red pickup. Some country song plays on the radio as I try not to drive over any potholes. Like it's hard for her to speak, she tells me her address. I force myself to stick to the speed limit. Getting to her home, a simple bolted-down trailer, I park the car in front. She opens the car door herself, but I run around to the side before she can exit, taking her hand in mine to help her down. I hold the small of her back as we walk. She fumbles with her keys, a massive chain, but quickly finds them. The door opens to a clean home with white walls and flowery furniture. Her feet turn toward her bedroom, and I swiftly follow her lead. Hitting the bedroom lights, I lift her in my arms and gently place her on top of the bed, pulling off her short boots. The bedspread is pink. A large framed photo sits on her wooden nightstand. She is smiling in a blue cap and gown next to an older man with a wide, proud grin. Lily is someone's daughter. I head to the kitchen and find a glass in the cupboard, filling it with ice from the old white freezer and water from the sink. I take it to her bedroom before asking, "Any Advil?"
Motrin. Bathroom.
Her voice rasps. It hasn't returned. I immediately find it and remove two pills. Placing them in her hand, I finally ask, Are you okay? She swallows the medicine with a large sip of water, wincing, and then rolls away from me. My cue to leave. I hightail it back to my place. It's just been going south in my head for too long, but this is a new low. Dirt kicks up around the car when I pull up to my small home, but I don't wait for it to settle before jumping out. Within seconds, I'm rummaging through my own kitchen and pulling out a bottle of tequila, twisting the cap open. I need it to function. God is watching, my father loved to remind us at our wooden dinner table. He'd built it himself. Chewing his collard greens closed mouth and buzzed hair with his back ramrod straight, he'd lecture. I grew up well. Football captain, great friends, church every Sunday. Both my parents were hard-working and God-fearing. When kneeling for Holy Communion, I'd shut my eyes, just as I'd been taught, regardless of the fact that I was constantly restless from sitting too long. When I confessed to the priest, there was nothing I'd withhold. I believed in God back then. I still want to. But how can I now, amid the shit I've seen? I take a few more gulps, aiming to drown myself in liquor and old-time memories. Aaron beating me in a shootout. It was one time, damn it, but he never forgot. That time when Dad drove his truck into a ditch and the whole football team came to help push it out. Or the time Mom baked that zucchini bread for our new neighbor, but Aaron and I found it sitting hot in the oven, just waiting to be eaten. She can make another one, I said, slapping each other five. We used our hands like spoons, shoveling the warm bread into our mouths until there wasn't even a crumb remaining. It was so damn good. We didn't pause to get forks. Mom found us there with our hands in the oven, and boy, did she yell. I take another swig, laughing. Aaron standing at the door next to my father, watching me as I readied myself to leave for boot camp. His blue eyes were full of hero worship for his older brother, who was willing to risk his life for God and country. As he was 3 years younger than myself, life with Aaron was a continual test of strength and strategy. And by that I mean we basically beat the living shit out of each other on a daily basis. Still, we were tight when it mattered. The Twin Towers had fallen weeks prior, and we'd watched a documentary on television about the strength and pride of our Navy. After all, good old boys like us had been raised to represent our country and do it proud. After I made my choice to go, he swore to join me after he turned 18. We shook on it. On the brick steps leading to our front door, my father hugged me to his chest. It's what we do, he said into my ear. As a Vietnam veteran, he'd seen and done his share. My mother's tears weren't silent as I left home. She was proud, but terrified.
I'm proud of you, but what about school? Your football scholarship?
She reminded me of my old plans, worry etched within her words.
When I come home, I'll finish it all up, I swear.
I hugged her, but she shook in my arms as I kissed her goodbye. 4 years later, Dad died of prostate cancer. 1 year after that, my mama died from breast cancer. And 2 years after that, Aaron was gone when a roadside bomb went off in Iraq. And my world turned. Some hearts are full of gratitude and joy, eager to make the earth a better place. My heart is disfigured, and it can no longer be trusted. I retired to an empty house with nothing inside but furniture, photographs, and ghosts. In my bed that first night, between stale sheets that smelled vaguely of my high school gym locker mixed with my mom's detergent, I stayed up late to watch TV, hoping to adjust to the time change. A commercial came on for gourmet cat food, served in a shimmering crystal bowl. In my mind's eye, I saw children rummaging, barefoot, through trash, looking for scraps to eat. Meanwhile, here in the USA, cats ate salmon out of gemstones. What is this world coming to? I became angry. It took a few weeks, but I called friends to try to reacclimate. Reading the pamphlets, I was urged to reconnect. But it was all in vain. I called my high school girlfriend, Sally. She had been the cheerleader, and I had been the football captain. Cheesy, sure. But we had some real good times. We were innocents back then. Not that we weren't partying, having sex, and drinking beers from kegs, because we were. I'd always been the type to enjoy life. Still, we were innocent in our thinking. All I thought about were grades, college, sports, and getting laid once or twice a day by my sweet and super hot girlfriend. It had been a fun life. A simple life. I picked up the phone and dialed with hope in my chest. Turned out she was married with three kids. I could barely hear her over the sound of children screaming in the background. Next, I called Tex. He told me he was running the town auto shop and married to Jane, his own high school sweetheart. Let's get a beer sometime. Sure. Hanging up, I called Billy, a CPA now living in Connecticut with his wife, whom he'd met at Yale. Always was a smart guy. Hell, I am too. But with no college degree or work experience in the field, I'm behind. Shannon was next. His mom answered and told me he'd died in a car accident during his senior year in college. I was floored. No one had told me. Some friends from the SEAL teams wanted to connect, but I didn't. Could barely look them in the eye after Rex's death. Loneliness and guilt threatened to pull me under at every turn. Like my father, physical labor was a go-to. I refinished the wooden staircase in my family home, repainted the shutters blue, fixed some shaky white tiles in the bathrooms, and finally sold the house in an auction. It was time to hit the road. Bouncing from spot to spot, I found myself in New York City and did a little fighting for cash. "It sucks to have to train these Wall Street fucks," a guy tells me after an underground bout beneath a shitty bar on the outskirts of Times Square. A gash over his blackened eye trickles blood as men yell and jeer around us. But it's a good way to ease back into the real world after leaving the military. Money and hours are pretty good, too. And the guy who owns the place, Joe, he's a decent guy. Lifting a small, clear plastic cup filled with water, he swallows it down like a shot of tequila. "He was in the Navy himself. I think Special Forces. He gets it," he adds. Blood continues to ooze. "He needs stitches." I point to his brow with my forefinger. He shrugs. "Whatever." He says it like it's the least of his worries. "It's just one of many." I hand him my sweaty white towel. It's better than getting blood in the eye. Lifting it to his brow, he presses firmly to stop the flow. I pull the gun from my pants, spinning the black piece on the wooden table. What's the point of life, really? My bladder reminds me it's full. I lean against the wall, letting it support me as I make my way to my small, blue-tiled bathroom. "I want to smoke," I say to no one. Unzipping my jeans, I lean my hand against the sink to keep steady. Heading back into the kitchen, I check the junk drawer by the fridge. I push random keys and take out menus around until I find the pack. Shit, it's empty. I crunch it in my hand as my phone buzzes. On shaky legs, I make my way to the table where my phone and gun sit. It flashes red. I've got a message. "Vincent. Yo, dinner at my place tomorrow night. Eve's cooking." It only took a few months of training and sparring with Vincent at Joe's gym, and I was lucky enough to call the man my friend. As it turned out, Vincent was living in New York while out on parole, but he was in the midst of completing construction on the Milestone, a large-scale hotel and casino complex out on Nevada's tribal lands. When he offered me the job to head security, I jumped at the chance. Even though I had no prior experience, Vincent trusted me to figure it all out. Luckily, my extensive military background easily translated into the security business. I connected with some of my brothers from the SEAL teams, and together we began VST, the Vulcan Security Team. Would I let Vincent down? The Milestone is his life as well as mine. Vincent gave me this opportunity on a silver platter. He and I have a good thing going, and more is yet to come. Bringing fresh water onto the reservation is next on our agenda, and hiring veterans to do the work will be a great thing. I continue to spin my gun, dark thoughts pushing through. I wonder, why wait? Others can take my spot with Vincent. I'm not afraid of death. In fact, it would be better there. Valhalla. No more nightmares. No more waiting for the last shoe to drop. I almost killed a woman tonight. She could have died. I'm a loaded gun. My hands shake as I lift my phone. I type and delete. Put it down. Spin the gun. Pick the phone back up again. Finally, I type. Yeah, I'll be there. Send.
Chapter 1. Lauren. Las Vegas is completely phony, but fun if you buy into its game. When Sanam said she was getting married to the super wealthy Reza Nader, everyone begged for a bachelorette party in Vegas. It seemed like it would be a fun idea at the time, but now I'm seriously regretting saying yes. They're all in amazing places in their lives, while I'm stuck in the same spot I've been for the last 10 years. A legal secretary at Cryer, one of the most prestigious law firms in LA, and completely single. I've had boyfriends, of course, but none to love. I'm 32 years old, and I want to settle down with a smart, intelligent, kind, and handsome man who loves me. Where the hell is he? I've dated men who checked every box in my credential list, and yet all of them have turned out to be utter assholes. The heavy rap music bounces against high concrete walls, painted to look like marble, and bursting against my eardrums. Bodies, costumed and practically nude, gyrate on the dance floor. A life-sized metal birdcage dangles from the ceiling by our table. A woman dances inside. If you can call spreading your legs and grinding against the bars, dancing. It's Cirque du Strip. I don't want to stare, but it's hard not to. I mean, how the hell does she contort herself in these positions? The theme of the party tonight is turn a trick, get a treat. And my entire group, along with the rest of the club, is dressed accordingly. I turn toward my friends, simultaneously cringing at their antics and wanting to make sure they've had enough water. They're all rolling on Molly, and their happiness has reached cloud 9 status. Apparently, Roxy and Allie got it from Sandy, who swears up and down it's as pure MDMA as you can get. The alleged result? The euphoria of ecstasy without any down. I know because I did all the research beforehand. Everyone's been texting for weeks about the party favors tonight, and of course, I immediately looked up all the details. I'm not planning to partake, but I'm also not one who appreciates a surprise. If everyone around me is going to be on drugs, I need to know what to expect. Sanam moves to where I stand, hugging me with more empathy and love than I ever thought she was capable of feeling. I'm furious with her for rolling on drugs, but her kindness right now makes it hard to be angry. Her expensive perfume moves through my nose, making my eyes tingle. It's the same scent she's been wearing since we were in college, reminding me of when we lived together during our senior year at UCLA. Memories of how we'd find lunch specials from the fanciest restaurants and eat there, waiting for rich businessmen to see us and ask us out for dinner. It was all fun and games for me, but not for Sanam. Over time, finding the man with lined pockets became everything to her. We used to be inseparable, but our priorities changed drastically over time, and at this point, we couldn't be more different. I want to still love her because of what was, but it feels as though I can no longer trust her. In fact, everything in my life these days looks and feels like filler, overstuffed with fleeting conversations and pretentious hellos. She pulls back, smiling. I know I'm getting married and you're not. I mean, not for a really long time at least. But we have to stay best friends forever, okay?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?